KZSU-FM Stanford, welcome to another edition of Hearsay Culture. My name is Dave Levine. I'm an associate professor at Elon University School of Law, as well as an affiliate scholar at the Center for Internet Society at Stanford Law School. Thanks for joining me today on Hearsay Culture. Today I'm excited to have on Stefan Larsson and Marcin DeKaminski, who are affiliated with the CyberNorms Research Group at Lund University's Internet Institute in Sweden. I met Marcin and Stefan at a conference this past summer, but I was familiar with their work on the international side, and we got to talking, and I knew that they would be excellent guests on the show because of the work that they've done regarding copyright infringement and online copyright infringement and piracy in Sweden. They've done a couple of very interesting studies, empirical studies, that we're going to discuss today. Two articles that they have co-authored with Måns Svensson, who is not joining us today on the show, involve the role of pirates in copyright infringement and the demographics and the behaviors and activities of people involved in online piracy or online infringement. And we'll talk about the distinction between those words in our discussion in Sweden. The two articles that they have, one is called The Research Base Studying the Global File Sharing Community, and the other is Convergence, the International Journal of Research into New Media Technologies, article Online Piracy, Anonymity, and Social Change, Innovation through Deviance. And so we're going to take a close look at these two articles and talk about the empirical research that that Marcin and Stefan did. And we're going to take an even closer look at the activities and the state of affairs in Sweden, which has an interesting history here, and which also has some legal differences that we may talk about a little bit as well. But with that very short introduction, and because Stefan and Marcin are joining us via Skype on Election Day in the United States, Tuesday, November 6th, and because of their schedules, which has created urgency as a result of my tight schedule, we are going to begin with a little bit shorter introduction. So, Marcin and Stefan, thank you for joining me today on Hearsay Culture.
Hey, thanks. Glad to be here.
My pleasure. Marcin, let me start with you, and then I'll go to Stefan. Standard question that I ask most of my guests. Marcin, tell us a little bit more about your background and how you became interested in this topic.
Yeah, I have been a part of the Swedish internet community for at least 10 or 15 years, depending on how you count, since mid-90s, maybe, when I started doing or organizing alternative media and activist communities here in Sweden. Then I began involving in internet politics, doing I have been involved in something that's called the Bureau of Piracy here in Sweden, which is a was actually a pro file sharing lobby group, trying to counter the increasing internet intellectual property movement here in Sweden. But on the academic side, I'm a sociologist and have been involved in or interested in net cultures and organizing and the organizing of youth cultures online, and that's how I got involved in the CyberNorms project a few years back.
And I should mention, as part of that very quick introduction, that in fact Stefan is a postdoc and researcher in the sociology of law, and Marcin is a PhD candidate in the sociology of law, which is an interesting angle that we're going to be talking about. But to emphasize, you are not lawyers per se, which is okay, by the way, and that's something that that allows for a different discussion that we might have otherwise. Marcin, let me before I go to you, Stefan, I do want to follow up. So. You know, the word piracy, of course, is a loaded word. I think certainly in the United States, if you said that you were a piracy lobbyist, that would raise the hackles of a lot of people in the content and entertainment industries. Can you describe briefly what that organization did?
Well, basically, in the beginning of the 21st century, in 2002 maybe, the intellectual property movement, which in Sweden means the Anti-Piracy Bureau and the IFPI, which is kind of the MPAA or RIAA of Sweden, started to discuss how to handle stuff like file sharing or piracy online. And what happened was that in a quite broad youth cultures, there was a lack of acceptance of that discussion. So several groups started to form discussing these issues from an internet perspective, so to say, trying to at least raise the issues of internet community when it comes to file sharing and piracy. And of course, I mean, these are loaded terms. I understand that, but I think it's quite contextual. In Sweden, we have had a really loud and quite clear and honest debate about file sharing and piracy during the last 10 or 15 years, which hasn't really gone to legal matters yet, at least not in the kind of way that it has gone in other parts of the world, including U.S.
Stefan, same question for you. A bit about your background and interest in these topics.
Yeah, well, I'm more. My track is academic, I would say. I am a lawyer, by the way, but it's more an academic lawyer. I studied law in Sweden, which is 4.5 years of law studies. But you tend to not discuss, you know, societal issues. You don't. You tend to not. You just study law as if there were not a problem between law and society, you know?
I see, uh-huh.
So I got into sociology of law, which is more, you know, the social scientific approach to law, and really found my place. So that's my background. And as a law student 10 years ago in Lund in southern Sweden, you saw that, okay, I studied copyright law and IP law on one side, but on the other side, I see all the kids, all the students just, you know, copying, file sharing. Then that's such a clear example when you need to have some kind of broader conception of law, or you have to study law in another way to understand what's going on with law in society. So, I mean, my background interest comes from that, I would say, 10 years ago, you know, seeing this kind of discrepancy between law and what's actually going on. So now I continue to write about these things and defended my PhD thesis 1 year ago on copyright law in a digital society. And I'd say 3 years ago, me and Måns Svensson, which you mentioned, and a professor, Håkan Hedén, started this CyberNorms research group because we saw this kind of social norms on one side and legal norms on another side. So early in that project, we met Marcin, which became, we've been working for 3 years now in this group, which has grown from 3 persons to 10 persons right now. So CyberNorms research group is really important to me. I mean, basically the academic track, I don't have this other side that Marcin has, I'd say.
Well, yeah, the divide, of course, certainly in the academic world, U.S., between practicing lawyers, as we'd say, the people that are representing clients and working in a traditional sense, and the academics who are lawyers, is really a gulf. It's a gulf that I try to bridge with the radio show, but something that's very real. Let's jump in, gentlemen, to talk about the state of affairs in Sweden on technology. Again, the listenership of Hearsay Culture is quite broad, but I suspect that there are many listeners who are not familiar, even in a basic sense, on the general climate in Sweden with regard to things like internet use and laws. So perhaps, Stefan, I'll continue with you and just kind of ask for your broad overview in terms of the general climate as it relates to internet and internet speech and the exchange of information on the internet. What is the general perspective in Sweden, if there is one, on those issues?
I think to understand it, you need to know that Sweden is really early had politics for internet and broadband access. So a lot of people, I mean, most people in Sweden have computers and internet access and have had that for a number of years. So I think Sweden has been really in forefront when it comes to internet access, which is really relevant for, I mean, what has happened in Sweden the last 10 years. So we have on the, well, I don't know, the politics would be that it's kind of polarized. We have one really strong youth movement. I think Marcin could speak more about that. I mean, Sweden still has hosted the Pirate Bay. So, as an example of what has grown out of this kind of internet access that everyone has had. And on the other side, there's a kind of strong content industry. Not as strong as, you know, in the US context, but still, it's really a polarized debate. So when everyone's side says something, the other side attacks that side, kind of. So I think that Sweden is interesting internationally from that aspect, that you can, I mean, all the early signs of what happens with internet access and, you know, the flows of the internet, you can see them in Sweden, and then you can probably say what's going to happen in the other countries where, you know, internet access is growing.
Well, that, you know, and that indeed is one of the reasons why, you know, I wanted you on the show, because of the close connection in Sweden to the Pirate Bay. Like I said to Marcin, the idea of having a piracy lobby in the United States would be the functional equivalent of putting up a lightning rod and asking for the lightning to hit you. So I'll ask the same question of you, Marcin. Anything to add to Stefan's response with regard to the state of affairs generally in Sweden?
I think it's important to see that the context really is different between Sweden and the US, for instance. I mean, we have a broadband penetration in Sweden that is 85 or 86%, which means that almost every single household in Sweden has access to broadband. And this is something that we have had for several years. I think in the year 2000 or something, there were big governmental investments for putting broadband fiber into the ground, making sure that every household would have internet access. And this is important to know, because what we are seeing now is the effect of what actually happened 15 years ago, maybe, when a generation grew up knowing nothing else but the internet.
Mm-hmm. And so with regard to Pirate Bay and thinking about those issues, what is the general, again, it's polarized, and I understand that, but to the extent that you have your average internet user, I know this starts getting into your studies, but before we even get there, is there a general perception among those that are using the technology with regard to the sharing of information? Is it a free-for-all atmosphere, generally speaking? Are people conscious of the issues? Marcin, what would you say before we get into the details of your study?
Yeah, I think you have to understand that it's a contextual difference between Sweden and the U.S., In Sweden, we have a broadband penetration of 85%, which means that almost every household in Sweden has access to pretty good broadband and internet connections. And this is something that has been managed by governmental funding since at least 10 or 15 years. In the year 2000, we had a big campaign from the government stating that broadband was for all. So they funded really huge investments in putting fiber into the ground and making sure that all major cities at least have good fiber connections. And this has become a really vital point when discussing issues of today, since this means that we have a generation that is young and quite young that knows nothing besides a life with or on the internet. And that makes the discussions about file sharing or piracy, for instance, a bit different in Sweden and the U.S., I guess.
The world of Pirate Bay is one that, again, I think some people may be familiar with, but I think many listeners may not have fully heard of. And so, Marcin, I'll continue with you, and then we'll go to Stefan. Tell us at the fundamental beginning, what is Pirate Bay?
Pirate Bay begins its history in 2003, in late 2003, when me and some of my friends actually started a small BitTorrent tracker. BitTorrent was a pretty new protocol at the time, trying to organize file sharing for well, us and our friends. It wasn't meant to be anything else. So the Bureau of Piracy, which was the name of the group where I was involved at the time, started the Pirate Bay. But the thing was that the demand for such a service was a bit bigger than we expected. So during the following months, the Pirate Bay just exploded, since it was one of the few international file-sharing sites, peer-to-peer sites, that was open for all and not hidden behind the passwords or payments or stuff. So quite fast it grew out of our hands, and we just released it to a different group of administrators, which then eventually turned up in court for running the service. But the point was to find a way to match the demand for open and accessible peer-to-peer sharing.
Stefan, anything to add to that response?
Yeah, I could. Last time I checked, the Pirate Bay is still like top 100 most visited sites in the world. I think it was 76 last week, which is more visits than the New York Times online. And I think they have like 5 million registered users. So I'm just adding to the picture of it. I mean, it's a very well-known BitTorrent site. It's extremely big.
Now, and you know, again, I mean, I am harping on it, but I think it's significant. Pirate Bay, as a name, again, is asking for attention. Is that the goal for Pirate Bay? In other words, in the U.S., we might say that, are you trying to be a test case? In other words, are you looking for people to challenge or question what you're doing to make law or policy? Again, it's kind of an overarching question, but why the name Pirate Bay? Stefan, anything you want to say about that?
Well, now I got guilt by association, it sounds like. I'm not a part of the Pirate
Bay. Oh, no, I'm not asking that. Let me be clear. I'm not accusing either of you of anything. I'm just curious about the name itself, and if you have any insights as to why it, whoever they are, choose that name. Marcin, if you want to take that one, sure.
Well, the name Pirate Bay is provocative, and when the site was founded like 10 years ago, it was the point of founding the site was to be provocative. In that context, it's not really strange that the name was chosen, I guess. But over the years, the image or the the look of the Pirate Bay, the face of Pirate Bay has changed, of course. So. I'm not sure that a site could be born today, which called itself the Pirate Bay.
Now, getting into the first of the two articles that I mentioned, and when we're chatting with Stefan Larsson and Marcin D. Kaminski of Lund University in Sweden on KZSU-FM, Stanford, and Hearsay Culture, your article, The Research Base, Studying the Global File-Sharing Community, you talk about two core sociological concerns that you have in this study, and I want to start there. You talk about legal homogeneity and legal social norm conflicts, and Marcin, perhaps I'll turn to you on the first one, or perhaps I'll turn to you on the second one. As far as the legal social norm conflicts, what issues arise there in your study of the Pirate Bay?
Start with me in the first.
Yeah, I could. Well, whoever would like to take that question, I guess.
Yeah, well, it's the research based study is. I think we have to see it in as a sequel to. We made a first study in Sweden with about 1,000 respondents before that, and then obviously in a nation like Sweden, it's this one legal setting. But when you study. Like in the research bay, you study a lot of countries, and we've been covering, it's almost a near global study. I mean, we got 76,000 respondents, although the majority is in US and Europe. Then it becomes much more interesting you have to compare the results to something legal, since, online piracy seems to be criminal, or it's regarded in a similar fashion in so many countries. It's almost international norm, kind of pretty similar in all countries. So we have to draw that legal view first, and then compare it to the behavior kind of. So. Yeah, I don't know if I answered your question.
Well, I think you have, and perhaps I should have asked that background question about the study itself, which you've started on, Stefan. With regard to those 76,000 respondents, perhaps you could talk, or perhaps I'll ask you, Marcin, to talk a few minutes about the methodology here. How did you identify who you were going to speak to, and what kinds of questions did you ask?
Well, the two studies are different in the methodological context. The Swedish study that we have done is a representative. We have a representative group from Swedish population between 15 and 25 years old, both file sharers and non-file sharers for that reason. But when it comes to the Pirate Bay, we chose to try to describe the file sharing community as it is, not comparing it to an outside world. So we found a way to make contact with the Pirate Bay. And put our logotype as the site's logotype for 3 days, 72 hours, showing every single user of the Pirate Bay that we were running this survey, and ask them to participate. And as you said, 72,000 respondents answered our call or question and joined the survey.
And with regard to the results themselves, which we'll get into, at the top level, you have these two concerns. Perhaps I should ask the questions a little bit differently. What do you mean in your study, Marcin, by legal homogeneity?
I'm not sure if I should answer that.
Okay,
I'm not sure if I can answer that.
Okay, then, Stefan, is that something you want to pick up?
Yeah, sure. It's just that how you regulate, how you legislate copyright law is very similar in basically all the whole world.
Mm-hmm. And so that, go ahead.
I mean, you could, if you think about it, you could regulate it in so many different ways. But when it comes to copyright, it's not.
So that's something that we can dig into a little bit, and probably this is a good time to do it. With regard to copyright law in Sweden, what I took from the studies was, in fact, that you have a very similar system to the U.S. In the sense that there are there is a fairly straightforward way to establish copyright infringement or piracy, whatever term you want to use, and damages. And notwithstanding the existence, a strong presence of a counter lobby, as it will, the law seems to have gone in that direction. Is that right? Is that generally the state of affairs in Sweden?
Yeah. Because I think it's really important from a scientific perspective, because if you would have, if each country would have its own chance to regulate or legislate the way it wanted, we could have a number of countries trying different paths. But since everyone has signed the same agreements, Sweden being part of the EU, which being part in the same international treaties, there's very little national, own ways of trying to regulate the issue. So it's kind of locked in a way.
To what, and Stefan, I'll continue with you and then go back to Marcin in a moment, to what do you attribute this legal homogeneity? In other words, why in your view is it that we seem to have uniformity around this issue where there are significant differences in other areas of IP like patent law, though that's changing too?
I guess historical reasons, there were no reasons for trying to separate it nationally before, until we reached this thing called the internet, when we suddenly faced a lot of problems, a lot of new problems with copyright law. So I guess we became locked through international treaties before we got the internet. And then when we have the internet and see that there's so many problems attached to copyright law in practice, then it's really hard to, have any attempts of trying to find other paths. So we have, in Sweden particularly, we have a situation where law is going in one direction. I mean, stronger enforcement, long protection times, like everyone else. And a practice which we measured, which is really not complying with law. But then there's some kind of, you know, unbalanced approach, or the law is not working in practice, but still the enforcement is not trying to make everyone follow the law, because that would be a too massive enforcement. Then we would try to change the behavior of millions of Swedes, which would be, I mean, we are only 9 million Swedes, so there's some kind of vacuum or some kind of imbalance.
And that's what I think I want to take up after a very short break here with Marcin, which is the conflict, as you identify it, between what the law says and how people are actually behaving online. You're listening to KZSU-FM Stanford and Hearsay Culture. For those of you that listen to KZSU regularly, you know that KZSU is a nonprofit, non-commercial radio station at Stanford University that requires donations from listeners like you to continue its diverse programming. You have a couple of ways you can make a donation to KZSU. You could email our underwriting department at underwriting@kzsu.stanford.edu, or you can go to our webpage at kzsu.stanford.edu and click on Donate to KZSU. Regardless, I hope you keep listening to the station. So Marcin, let me turn to you and ask you, based upon your experience in the study, so what you have in Sweden is a fairly, at this point, typical regime with regard to proving and defending against copyright infringement, and yet as you've described it in both of your studies, clearly people are behaving differently. Before we get into the result of your study and the numbers, which are quite astounding, what is, in your view, crystallizing the legal and social norm conflict?
Well, here in Sweden, I think it all goes back to the fact that we had a quite slow enforcement of copyright infringement in Sweden, or development of enforcement. I would say that now we're trying or closing in on the U.S., for instance, but we had many years when the cultures surrounding file sharing were stronger than even the attempts from law enforcement sides to enforce copyright. And that made it the difference between the legal rules, for instance, that the file sharing actually was forbidden, was not really enforced in Sweden until the last 5 or 6 years, when law enforcement agencies started to hunt down individual file sharers and services for that reason. And that made that the base of file sharers, or copyright infringers, if you want, is so massive here in Sweden that the conflict between the legal rules, let's say the law, and the social norms within those cultures is really big. And that's our main result from the Swedish studies as well.
Stefan, you want to add anything to that?
Well, only that when we speak of the big picture, is that we see in our studies that, okay, there's no social norm corresponding to copyright in terms of, you know, protecting copies. So it means that almost all people that's up to 30 or something, they don't think it's morally wrong to file share. It's just that everyone tends to be... you don't want to get caught. So for the few cases that we have in Sweden, it's more like it's just a few that's been unlucky that, you know, picked out of the stack of people file sharing. So, I mean, to understand what it means to society, you have to try to grasp this picture, I think. If most people don't think it's wrong, and then just a few get caught when copyright is enforced, it's kind of it asks interesting questions about how we regard law overall, I think. Because that could be the problems in the long run if we keep on having a legislation that's more and more kind of free-floating from what people actually think is right and wrong.
You know, it's always been a source of, you know, some amusement and some concern that you have industries that are not giving consumers what they want, although the flip side, of course, is that there are some or many consumers, and I want to talk about your empirical findings in a moment, who want things for free. And, of course, that's not a model that's going to work too well for anyone that has to actually eat and, you know, and earn money. Your results are quite startling, and perhaps, Stefan, I'll continue with you and then and come back to Marsan. Let me ask the basic question. Based upon your study, how widespread is piracy? And by that, I mean copyright infringement, and particularly, right, the illegal downloading or file sharing of copyrighted materials.
Well, it's I mean, it's a really a generational issue. It's the young ones, it's very common. So, but we've seen, I mean, in the Swedish study, we see that after the implementation of a particular enforcement law, it's called IPRED. It's a it's an EU directive being implemented in Sweden in 2009. Just after that, you saw that the actual behavior, the file sharing frequencies, went down a bit. So people backed off a bit in this between 15 and 25 years old. Although at the same time, we saw an increase in the use of anonymity services. So some people file shared less, even though the social norm which we measured remained extremely low. So people didn't think it was more wrong after this legal implementation. It's just that they became more afraid of getting caught. And one consequence of that was that some tend to rather pay for being anonymous online. I mean, harder to trace online than to pay for copyrighted content. So, I mean, in terms of, in Sweden at least, it's really common, and the social norm is really weak among the young ones, corresponding to copyright.
Marcel, let me ask you, what kinds of methods, if there are most prevalent in terms of how, right, the nuts and bolts of this piracy? Did you get a sense of what is currently or what is the trend in Sweden?
Well, this question hasn't been asked in the Swedish surveys. But in the Pirate Bay study, we did ask this question, and what we can see is that still BitTorrent is a really common method for file sharing. But what actually surprised us was that what we call sneaker nets, I mean offline file sharing, is really common amongst our respondents as well.
One of the things that you identified in your study, in the research bay, the larger study, was that the people involved in this behavior were overwhelmingly men. Now, in one sense, that isn't surprising, because certainly the stereotype is that you know, it's boys who are playing with computers and playing video games and liking computers. But of course, the reality is you know, is that more and more women and girls are involved here. And obviously now with the prevalence of social media and the games and apps that are attached to it, those numbers are changing radically. With regard to this finding, however, and I'll ask you this question, Marcin, and Stefan, I'll come to you with regard to what I found to be fascinating as well, which is this perception of a legal difference between uploading and downloading. But starting with this broad conclusion that it's overwhelmingly men, to what do you ascribe that reality? Why is that the case?
This is one thing that we also got very surprised by, because the file sharing communities are, at least they have an image of being equal and inclusive, and a sharing is caring mentality is quite common. But what we see is that 95% of our respondents of the Pirate Bay study are men, which really, even if it can't really be questioned, then that the big majority of users are men. And this is really interesting, and we really don't have a good answer to why. But what we can see when we are doing interviews in schools in Sweden is that the gender differences is seems to be visible there as well. That mostly boys are doing the actual file sharing, but girls are still kind of getting hold of the file sharing material in some ways by most often using just offline file sharing or using boyfriends or brothers as proxies to the content online, which is, I don't know, it's a next level file sharing, so to speak.
Do you want to add anything to the issue of men being overwhelmingly involved, Stefan?
Yeah, sure. It's just that, yeah, Marcin mentioned the focus groups. We made this around some smaller groups of interviews with people 15 and 16 years old, because we want to understand these issues more. Because, I mean, when you measure something quantitatively like this, I mean, you have 76,000 respondents, it's really hard to understand all what's behind the figures, kind of. You see, you can, of course, you can know a lot of stuff, but when it comes to the driving forces or whatever kind of system is attached to those who file share with BitTorrent, you have to ask people basically more questions, which we did, and that's, I think that's really important. In order to understand the file sharing community, it's really interesting to hear that everyone watched movies, everyone listened to music, but no one paid in this. 15 to 16 years old, including girls. So it means that even though it's a boy thing to BitTorrent file share, it's everyone. I mean, everyone is sharing somehow, just not through BitTorrent. Which is, I mean, we interpret that as this kind of division of labor, or, you know, as they have different roles in the ecosystem of sharing. Basically, I mean, so then we start to draw this kind of a bigger picture of how the behavior is, you know, sorted out, which is really interesting. I think we need to carry on these kind of studies to understand how, I mean, how people organize themselves when it comes to media distribution.
Right, and of course, you know, to the extent that we believe that there are types of infringement that should in fact be discouraged, at least from a traditional intellectual property utilitarian perspective, that is that the theft of intellectual property will lead to less production, understanding how people actually behave would be helpful in creating the law. Marcin, I know that you're short on time, and I do want to come back to you and ask you with regard to this second, and there were other conclusions to be clear in your study, but a couple have jumped off the page at me. Is this widespread belief that uploading and not downloading is illegal. That is, it's the individuals or entities who are placing the content in a space like Pirate Bay, or the ones who are sharing, are the people or entities who are actually doing something illegal and not those that are then taking that content. Again, you know, how widespread was that belief, and what do you make of that conclusion?
Well, the belief is quite widespread, and I think it's due to two main reasons. Partially that the law actually differs between uploading and downloading. I guess it's in many international contexts as well. In Sweden, it was, for instance, illegal to download stuff from the internet, even copyright-protected material, until 2005, while uploading was considered a breaching copyright and a copyright infringement, which makes it interesting when different parts of the transaction are handled differently in law. But it also is due to actual law enforcement. When in Sweden, for instance, we only have uploaders being dragged to court, uploaders and administrators of file sharing services, and not a single person that has only downloaded stuff. I know that this is different between countries, but it's still an important thing to have in mind that that law actually is used different for different kinds of participants in the file sharing activities.
Stefan, anything to add there?
No, right.
Yeah, you know, and what makes that, I think, all the more perplexing is not, although I agree that certainly the efforts of the content industry to go after uploaders, you know, has been quite pronounced, but of course it's the consumption of this content that, you know, makes piracy such a big deal. I'm curious to get, again, Marcin, as I know that your time is short, I'll ask you this question, and then we can go to Stefan. You know, one of the arguments that you tend to hear is that all of these individuals who are pirating are profits and money out of the pockets of the content industry. What do you make of that argument? In your study, did you get any sense of whether, in fact, the people who are pirating would otherwise be purchasing this content?
We really, it's hard for us to answer since we didn't really ask.
No, I understand. And yeah, to be clear, I recognize that it wasn't a question. I'm more asking. I know that this is anathema to people do empirical work, and so my apologies. I'm asking you to speculate a little bit. But based upon your sense of the data, notwithstanding the fact that the question wasn't asked, perhaps you don't have a hypothesis. But any thoughts on that front?
What we can see from our research is that it's really a small part of the people involved in file sharing that are uploaders. Almost 60 or 70% of our respondents from the Pirate Bay studies claim to never upload stuff, for instance, which means that it's really a drive-by file sharing community, so to speak, that people tend to consume more that there are uploading to the ecology of the file sharing community. But when it comes to actual purchases due to piracy, it's really hard to say because even though, I mean, the levels of when the levels of or when people like to court and paid and sentenced to fines, for instance, the fines are calculated of different set of figures that are really hard to settle if they are correct or not. I mean, it's quite the discussion is hypothetical, no matter from what direction you get into it.
Marcin, I know you do have to. I know you do have to go, and so I will thank you in advance for joining us today on the show. I'll continue the conversation with Stefan, but I'll certainly invite you back in the future. And again, I appreciate your flexibility in scheduling today.
Thank you.
Stefan, let's continue with this part of the discussion. Any sense on your front as to you know what is going on here in terms of lost revenue from the content industry?
Oh, well, it's really hard to make the link, but the link is made from a legal perspective, too, I think. For instance, in the terms of the first Pirate Bay case, which were in Stockholm, where they were sued by a number of actors, but still Hollywood, some part of Hollywood Industries were in Stockholm in the first case. And the way they calculated the damages, the model they used were based on, a specific sum per click or per download, which is, I mean, that's the way to say, to assume that those who file share would actually pay for every copy that they made. So it's kind of a, you know, pre-internet way of thinking about copies and distribution that is kind of used to try to calculate value in a digital context. And so that link is made in the case against the Pirate Bay, but it's not a strong link, I'd say, because I think that the behavior or how people treat these things are pretty much different when you can copy without expenses as opposed to buying a book or something, you know, physical. But I mean, the question is good. We try not although not to speculate too much, because we tried to, find facts.
No. And like I said, I recognize, and I probably should have said this as a disclaimer up front, that I know when I'm asking people doing empirical research to extrapolate in that direction, it's almost against your constitution.
It's a good. What I think it's good with it is that I think a lot of the debate is speculating. I mean, I think there are too few studies made on the actual, what's actually going on in the world. And I know that James Boyle and William Patry and scholars that you probably have met or know, they think that too. It's kind of copyright law has been growing evidence free. I mean, it's been growing as if everyone assumed that this will be good for creativity, although it's not any studies. I mean, it's not based on evidence. It's more based on faith, as William Patry writes, at least in his latest book called "How to Fix Copyright." But I mean, so I think it's a good. We should. I mean, the community of researchers should study these things.
Yeah, it leads to my next question with regard to the anti-counterfeiting trade agreement. Andrew Renz, who's a postdoc fellow at Duke Law School, has made a point that he, in his study of ACTA, the anti-counterfeiting trade agreement, could not locate a single empirical study that would even begin to answer the question about whether the exact provisions in ACTA were necessary to combat copyright infringement and piracy. What's your reaction to ACTA and, of course, the fact that ACTA was pretty much killed in the EU based upon both facts, real and imagined, with regard to ACTA and its impact?
I think it's... I think both sides have been free of evidence, I would say. I mean, ACTA, one of the problems with ACTA is that in terms of national legislations, or I mean, the Swedish parliament thinks that they actually make law in this field. The problem with ACTA is that it's a trade agreement, which, I mean, no one could see what was actually... what they actually talked about, and then suddenly this trade agreement should be implemented, which in consequence will affect a number of countries' laws. So in terms of legislation and in terms of democracies and what kind of laws should we have, from that perspective is really problematic.
Stefan, I'm at the point in the interview which I call the unfair portion of the show, and this is when I ask you questions that you may not have enough time to answer in full. But we have about 5 minutes left, and I do want to talk to you a little bit about the related smaller study that you did of anonymity and anonymity services. Again, because literally this is an unfair question, we only have a few minutes, perhaps you could tell us what anonymity services are and then what your survey showed with regard to anonymity online as it relates to piracy and copyright infringement.
Yeah, basically it's a tool online to make it harder to trace your identity, so which could be made in different ways, but in Sweden and in some other countries around here, we've seen some paid versions of these kinds of tools. It's used in, it's often called VPN, or it's encrypted. So when someone sees an IP number sharing files and want to find out where that trace leads to, if you use this kind of service, it leads to a proxy server. So it leads to the wrong place, basically. And if it is a paid service, it leads to a company that kind of helps protecting you. So then you have to ask this service, company to give out the other IP number that leads to to you, maybe. So it's a kind of a traceability to be less traceable tool. And why is that interesting in this case? Well, it's because whenever you want to, basically, when you want to implement a law or want to find someone doing something illegal, you have to identify the person. So that's basically the link. You need to legislate something. I mean, to find someone and to go to court, you need to find a person. You cannot just, the IP number would not be sufficient. So that's why I see, we see in the CyberKnowledge Research Group, the anonymity or the tools for anonymity as a really interesting key in copyright online. Because whenever you've got to fight over these issues, the identification is really relevant. And the studies we made, one, the Swedish one and the international one. First, the Swedish one, we saw that it is basically growing the uses of these kinds of services. So in the last 3 years, it's been increasing almost 50%. So, and it's related to file sharing frequency, particularly those who upload. So those who upload tend to be more anonymous than the rest, which is also suggesting some kind of it's adding to our picture of it as a division in a sort of kind of ecosystem, that there is some kind of gatekeeping role that's more BitTorrent file sharing and more anonymous and harder to trace, because they have more, you know, rationally they need more protection in a way. Yeah, jump in.
Yeah, no, so I was going to say, Stefan, you know, and we have about 3 minutes left, and I want to ask you, with regard to policymakers and lawmakers reading your studies, yours and Marcin's studies, what would you want them to take from it? I mean, it's one thing for, you know, for us to have the discussion, but if you're a lawmaker who's, you know, got a ton of issues on their plate, and this is one of them, what would be the one or two points that you'd want them to take from your study to then apply in the policymaking world?
Yeah, I think that could be a good end point. That's why it's also important to relate to social norms. I mean, what people in general think is right and wrong. Because, I mean, law cannot survive if people does not like it or if they don't agree with law. So the problem with anonymity is that if you go chasing people who does not comply with law, they tend to go anonymous, online, that is. So the problem, or the important question here from the law perspective, is that what if you go hunting file sharers, which is a really accepted behavior. You tend to drive the development of anonymity services online. So people go more, they learn more how to be anonymous online, which, I mean, then this use of encrypted tools spreads as a consequence of hunting file sharers. The problem is that, okay, it's not only harder to enforce copyright law, but it's harder to enforce any law online. I mean, and there's a number of crimes that no one likes, except maybe a few people. So that would be the bad consequence. So I think the law must kind of pay attention to that. Are we really want to, do we want to be internet to be more anonymous and encrypted? What happens to other crimes that we really don't like? Dave, I'm thinking, yep, next time on your radio show,
yes,
made a follow-up study for this big one. With this year, we haven't really processed the data yet, but in terms of countries, we have divided into countries, so we could compare any country to the U.S.
Well, that would be wonderful, because you know, particularly the work that you're doing is absolutely necessary, which is why I invited you on the show. There isn't enough of it, which is why I invited you on the show, and the fact that you're doing more of it is exactly why I'd like to have you and Marcin on the show again. Stefan Larsson, postdoc researcher on the sociology of law at Lund University's Internet Institute, and Marcin D. Kaminski, who had to leave us a few minutes ago, PhD candidate in sociology of law, also at Lund. Stefan, thank you for joining us today on the show, and certainly, as you said, I will take you up on that offer when you are ready to discuss it on air. But meanwhile, I think there's a lot of information to digest here. I should ask you, with regard to people who want to find your articles, can they get them? Where can they get them?
Probably look for any of our names will be, if you Google us, you will find it, or CyberKnowledge.
Cyber norms as a Google search term should come up with it. Excellent. Well, Stefan, thank you for joining us today on the show. This was a great discussion. I look forward to having you on in the future. But thank you for taking time today to chat with my listeners. I want to mention a number of things that are coming up. I have had such a busy semester for a variety of reasons, some good and because of a death in my family, some not so good. I have been remiss in posting the schedule. The last couple of weeks, for example, I was not able to record new shows because of these personal issues. But now we're back on track, and I anticipate having new shows for the remainder of the fall quarter, which runs through November, roughly into the beginning of December. As usual, during KZSU's interim period, I will not have new shows, but then we will have a new slate of guests coming up in January. I will be posting the schedule at long last, what's left of it, this week, but you can definitely look for that at hearsayculture.com. As always, you can get the show either listening live on KZSU from noon to 1 o'clock Pacific time on Wednesdays. You can also get the show via podcast by going either to hearsayculture.com, to Stanford Center for Internet Society's webpage at cyberlaw.stanford.edu, or by going to the iTunes page for CIS. As always, I welcome your comments, suggestions, and feedback at dave@hearsayculture.com. So again, thank you for listening to the show today. I am recording the show on November 6th, Election Day in the U.S. By the time it airs tomorrow, we may know who our next president is, although I suspect it's possible that there may be some close votes, and we may not know. But certainly, it will have been an eventful day, and I think we're going to have some guests down the road to talk about what the impact might be, depending on the outcome. But in the interim, I encourage you to continue listening to KZSU and stay tuned for more diverse programming. Have a great day.